And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 219. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this dual broadcast of You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein and Black and a Half. I am your host, Silas Lindenstein. Today, I've got another simulcast for you. I am joined by the writer and director of the new film Wild-Eyed and Wicked, G.S. Foxwood, along with two cast members from that movie, Michael Summers and Stephanie Estes. So they joined me and to discuss about the film. We talked about horror in general, why they like horror, why they want to scare me with this film, touch in a little bit why you should go see this film, Wild-Eyed and Wicked. And then I asked all of them the world famous seven questions, and I got some of the most creative answers I've ever had. In this edition, you will hear those funny answers. Let me tell you a little about the film Wild-Eyed and Wicked. It's being released by Gravitas Ventures across North America June 11th on TV on demand, Amazon Prime on demand, cable everywhere. It's going to be right. Description: Wild-Eyed and Wicked follows Lily Pierce, played by Molly Kuntz, in her attempt to strike back at the medieval creature that's haunted her family for generations. She must reconnect with her estranged father, Gregory, and a disgraced history professor, and learn how to draw upon a time of steel and blade when armor-clad knights rode out and dueled monsters to the death. Lily's therapist and girlfriend attempt to help Lily navigate the childhood loss of her mother, Sylvia. They encourage Lily on an anniversary of her mother's death to accept her father's invitation to visit him on the farm where Lily grew up. It's a horror film. I don't want to give you too much about it because I think there's a lot of surprises in it, but it had some really great moments in this film that I think you should check out. But mostly you should check out this interview and learn about them. And I think when you listen to the interview, that'll make you decide, I should check out this movie. Or maybe you'll listen to it and go, maybe I won't. But I don't think so. That's not how I feel. Not in my heart. Anyway, that's what we got for you today. Doing more of these dual casts, getting them on both episodes. Gotta get those numbers up here, right? Of episodes. So always happy to have movie, film related guests on this You're Watching a Movie podcast. And then on Black and a Half, having, a mix of whoever fascinates me. And they don't have to just be making movies, right? So, over here on You're Watching a Movie, you'll only get the film, television type people. So make sure you're subscribed to both of them is my point. Okay? So, I want to know what you thought. At the end of this, it's going to cut out. And I want you to tell me if you like this interview, what you think of their seven questions. I kind of want to know what your answers to some of the seven questions are. Let's see today. Tell me, what game do you like to play, or what game do you love? As I phrase it there, tell me in the comments, whether you're watching on YouTube or on the website, podcasting, wherever you're listening to this. Anyway, I want to thank you for watching and thank you for listening. And I want you to sit back, relax, open your hearts, and open your ear holes and listen to seven questions with the talent from Wild-Eyed and Wicked. Welcome. My name is Silas Lindenstein. I'm here out of Seattle, Washington.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's lovely in the theater here. This records for two shows. One is Black and a Half, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. And for You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein, that's my review and movie discussion strictly podcast. So I do two here. You're on two.
Wow. Thank you. That's great.
This horror. What is Do you guys like to get scared? Is there a what's the big attraction for horror? Everyone's making horrors now. Like, I remember it used to come out at Halloween. Now every month you all want to terrify me. Why?
Well, a couple of reasons. You know, I think the first is that you know, there are two, it's horror and comedy are the two most physically effective things. You know, people are screaming or people are laughing. And that's very attractive, not only to experience and a group setting, but also it's very attractive as an artist, you know, and because I also love, you know, I love cerebral movies and so forth. And, you know, it's kind of like everybody just sits there and at the end of the movie, they go, that was amazing. Like, that's cool too, I guess. But, or there's like, I don't get it. But when they're scared, you know, they're scared when they're, or if they're laughing and they think it's funny, you know, so like, this is a very attractive environment.
Yeah. The visceral reactions to horror, I think, are some of the most fun to have during a movie watching experience. And then I guess as an actor, horror is just like such a fun chance to really dabble in heightened emotions, heightened environments, heightened effects.
Let loose.
Yeah, let loose. Get a little crazy.
Yeah, a horror definitely allows you to let loose, you know, and to have fun. One of the things I always notice about horror films is that they take themselves a little less seriously than some of the other genres, and that's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
what I mean is, you know, what looks scarier? You know, what if they held the knife this way or that way, or you know, what if I lop off his arm as opposed to his nose? You know, I don't know. They're just sort of fun. Weird questions
that
you explore.
Michael and I were chatting earlier, and it's like in horror, like in life, you would, like, if you stood in the middle of the street and screamed at the top of your lungs, people would be like, go home.
Stop that.
When you're shooting a horror film, people are like, good job. And then let's do it again. Let's do it a couple more times.
Let me pop this baby's head off. Let's see how that looks. You know.
I'm an actor as well. I'm not busy like you folks.
You're joking with us.
A short,
shows.
48 hour film projects is kind of my most work and occasional goat wrangling on a commercial. But I've done more, and since doing this podcast. I used to watch one horror a year, maybe, and now I'm in horrors. I used to say, like, no, I'm not into horrors, but now I'm actually in horrors, like films, and now I'm always watching because they do come up with cool concepts that I'm like, oh, I want to check that out. And it's interesting watching with the audience to, like, okay, do you feel like, how often do you feel like you got, I don't know, Gordon, maybe, like, do you, when you come up with a good kill or whatever in the film, do you think you're pretty in tune with what the audience is, they're going to react there? Or like, has anything in screenings for this, have you been surprised at any moments in the film of that the audience like either thought was funny that you didn't, or I don't know, shocking there? Are you in sync with the audience here, or is there any surprises for this one?
Okay. Oh yeah. There's always, every audience is different. Every live audience is different, you know, and we were fortunate. We got to have two live screenings, at Austin Film Festival, which were both different, but both great. And we won the audience award there for our category, which was lovely. But, sneaky plug, I guess, on spontaneous. There's the word, sneaky plug. And then we had a great screening at Dances with Films. Then there was, you know, a private screening. I know that, Stephanie, I think you got to go to, we also did a cast and crew screening, and like every single time it was different. And you know, I screened it a ton at my, you know, house just for people here, different every time. And, you know, so people, you know, scream at different things, people laugh at different things. It's like, you have so much variety. But yeah, you know, but your question about, you know, would you, I sit around kind of like, ooh, I think of a good kill. Well, you know, I think of like thinking of good kills is probably a bit more like, you know, slashery focused. This one. And, you know, for me, it's thinking about, you know, anytime like I feel a fear reaction as a physical reaction, like right along the back of the neck. Mm-hmm. And so when I, you know, think of something or read something or see something that triggers that reaction, I always analyze it, because when you have physical reactions like that, it's very interesting. It's actually quite, it's like along some of the same place of like the nerve lengths on the back of the spine, similar to where you can feel an ASMR reaction, which is interesting. But yeah, I could, that's a tangent. I've probably gone off on a tangent.
ASMR, what's that?
AMS, here, let me, since I'm on the computer, I'll get you the actual, it's like I'm on like one of those really fancy podcasts where they're like, get up on the computer, AMS.
Well, ASMR. When those noises, like the crinkling of paper, and it gets
autonomous sensory meridian response. Now, has anybody ever had those reactions in this? Just me?
Well, not from videos. Just the no. I get that. I think there's pitches that actors will hit, like with certain words. That I remember, I was directing this play called Color of Life. A cover of life. And there was a monologue. Every time this actress hit this one word, it just set the tone, like a shiver down the spine. And it didn't matter. And I know it wasn't I knew what was happening. I'd seen it 100 times, right? But like every time they hit that note, it did something to me. And I think that, yeah.
Mine comes from, I know some people, they get it from like people whispering to microphones. That's not for me. But I get it very specifically when someone with a particular pitch of voice is talking to me in a way where there's no other way to say it. The shorthand is I say, I don't matter. The way as I say, it's like my responses and my engagement in the social situation doesn't matter. Like I've had ASMR responses to people, like just ask, like when someone came for like the Census Bureau, when I was living in New York City, and was just asking me basic questions, and I was just getting like the ASMR reaction on the back of my neck.
Wow.
Very mysterious. And he's funny, at the end, he was like, oh, I think that's all my questions. In my head, I went, dude, you could ask these all day. You have no idea. Like how
you're freaking me out, Census dude, but I like that. I'm analyzing it. I'm a filmmaker.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, anyway, that's a big old tangent. Sorry. But yes, fear reaction. I analyze that very much so.
I think that's really interesting about the actors and performers. And you are one, Silas, who we're like, oh my God, this really happened to me. I was like, oh my God, I'm experiencing great grief night right now. I'm going to go look in the mirror to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
And it actually helps. You know, you're like, oh, well, I have at least this tangible, this like thing that I can use. It's not just me feeling this horrible pain. At least I can like try and use this in a film someday.
Right.
I think it's a little more healthy than comedians, though, right? Like comedians where you're like, okay, I'm going to make this funny later and I'm going to hurt me hard. Like, oh, I can't wait to talk about this. I want to give you time to pitch the show for what, because I have some questions that I ask people every time they come on, but I want to, what do you think the draw is for this, for the audiences to come out to this, besides that you're winning festivals and such? What do each of you, what's your quick little, like,
who mentioned that? I don't know. It must have been spontaneous. Anyway, no. The draw, I hope, is for anybody that is interested, not only in, because like we have a lot of different genres of work. There's a siren going by. Maybe someone else can answer that question if it gets louder. Anyway, no, but people who are interested, anything medieval iconography, you know, and taking those and having them in the modern day, which is just fun, you know, have mano y mano, a modern knight, you know, someone learning to be a knight in the modern day is fun. And also people just want to be scared, people that want to have something that they will have, you know, to can, you know, chew on cerebrally, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but you know, it's like there's a lot of different draws I see coming to this. But yeah.
Yeah, I would say it's my favorite type of horror, which is a horror that is grounded in a real, like, emotional drama or trauma, which I think makes it more scary, because when you have a horror that's rooted in a reality, I feel like you can more easily see it happening to you, you know? And I think, like, this is, like Gordon said, this is a film, like, there are very, like, funny moments in it. There are heartbreaking moments in it. There are terribly scary moments in it. It checks so many boxes in terms of responses from a movie watcher, right? Like, I think like that in and of itself is a reason to go see it. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll scream. And then hopefully you'll maybe start reevaluating your own personal demons.
I think people are going to get a visceral reaction like that, that thing come up the back of the neck, and it's going to have to do with their, like, their own parents or their parenting. Oh, like, yeah. That's one of the things that I felt there was sort of a taboo being broken in this film in a way with, like, I don't want to give anything away, but some of the parents just sort of like acknowledging some of the difficulties of parenthood. Now that's talked about, but that aspect of a parent saying, you know, there's a part of me that's like, you know, I wish you were never born, because you, like, really, you know, changed my life. You really screwed things up, you know. Oh, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. Yes, but they might argue is the worst thing too. Certainly affected me a lot. Yeah. Now I'm gonna go reach for my sword, you know, that sort of thing.
Real dynamic characters, like real
intentional
characters that are dealing with real issues, real emotional.
I know I really enjoyed, like, trying to delve into this character, this father who was, had regrets. And then he's like, what am I going to do with that? That was really deep. And then you're using that, you're getting to express it to an extreme in a horror film in a way.
I on the line, Stephanie, what you said, there was a line I really liked in this. I wrote it down and I've lost it in my notebook, but I remember it. You said, in referencing the nightmares of seeing her mom in a nightmare, she said, well, better to something like, I bet I'd rather see better to see her in a nightmare than not at all.
Yeah.
And I was that was like, I heard that. I was like, that took me back. Like, dang. That hits on levels. And that's in the beginning. So I'm like, you don't know where it's going from there. So,
I think there's some truth to that. You hear that from people, you know, it's like that they don't want to forget sometimes, even when something might have been unpleasant, you know, a person that was unpleasant, but it's still, it's a part of your life. There's a lot of ambiguity questions.
Yeah.
And then Stephanie gets to say that line again in the movie in a scene we won't spoil.
So here I am, Silas Lindenstein, here with the cast members and director of Wild Eyed and Wicked. Wonderful title. Also, by the way, I love that title. So here on the first time people come on the show, I have 7 questions that I ask every guest. The Silas Lindenstein's world famous 7 questions. And if you'll indulge me here, we can round robin each one. Start with Stephanie, star of the film. Everyone's a star of the film. Michael too, but you know, in my eyes. So number one. What are you most nerdy about?
Most nerdy about?
And that doesn't have to be Star Trek. It's what is that thing that you are really into? That you really get into, and maybe know more than others or anyone should. I don't.
Oh my gosh. What am I really nerdy about? This is so embarrassing. At the moment, I'm really nerdy about Taylor Swift. I listen to
excellent.
all of her music. I'm really into the Torture Poets Department. I'm like watching her relationship with Travis Kelce very closely. I'm very invested in what happens between them. And I don't care who knows it. I didn't get to go to her concert and I'm torn up about it.
Yeah. Look, my daughter is very nerdy and into her, but also my wife is now currently, that's her hyper focus is Taylor Swift and learning about her.
I don't know how she's captivated me so entirely, but I'm like, I need to know what you're doing. Where are you touring next? What's happening in your relationship? It's wild. It's really wild.
Our family may have won lotto tickets, sort of, to we're going to be going to New Orleans to see her show. We've wanted to go to New Orleans anyway. And I was like, well, this is a good excuse, a reason to go and bring my daughter in her last before we kick her out of the house. Because the hotel costs too much in particular. But I appreciate that. I like a Swifty. I'm a Swifty. Michael, we have an extra. No, I sold it, but you could come.
Yeah, I'll go. Okay. I'm there.
So, Michael, what are you most nerdy about?
The history of ideas. I like history, and it's specifically about the history of ideas. And I've found, like, I'm just totally into this guy, David Graeber, right now, who's come out with a couple of really interesting books. And a lot of what he's talking about is, you know, why do we think the way we think today? Where did that come from? And I love it when they're like, yeah, but that's wrong. That sort of thing. And what that means is, like, we have certain assumptions, like the economy must grow. And that came from here. And that came from there. And that came from, that's what I'm nerdy about.
That's so cool.
Well, thank you, Steffi. So's Taylor Swift.
I mean, not really. I mean, yes, but also no.
All right, Gordon, what are you most nerdy about?
Most the most is hard, but like a few different things, you know. If nerdy, if we're just kind of like, as you said, something you're going to go crazy for, clearly lots of history, definitely sometimes specifically music history, sometimes, you know, modern EDM and all so many different kinds of music. Definitely for me, spirituality, the many different ways spirituality has, you know, myth and religion, et cetera, across time. There's fascinating, you know, there's fascinating stories of early religions, which are sometimes so different from what we think of them now. All sorts of things that one can jump into and talk endlessly about.
I'm down with those. My brother's a big EDM fan.
Cool. Really very cool. I'll see you at the race.
He's a DJ. Yeah. Number two, Stephanie.
Yeah.
What's something that you love to eat?
Everything. I joke that my favorite food is charcuterie plate. I love a good cheese and I love a good meat and I love some olives and like little cornichons on the side. Could eat it all day.
Wait, what did you say? Cornichons?
Many pickles.
Mini pickles.
Oh, is that what they're called?
Yeah.
The pickle? A cornichon. Nobody, yeah.
Or you can call them a gherkin.
Gherkin. Okay, I've heard that. Yeah. I thought you were about to say in a Cornish hen, and I'm like, what kind of charcuterie plate are you getting? Yeah.
Okay. Silas, yeah. It's either a hunk of cheese or a Cornish hen for me.
All right, Michael, what's something you love to eat?
Well, this is sort of new for me, but like all sorts of vegetables, because I've been like, my doctor's like, yeah, you can't eat this, you can't eat that, you can't eat the other. I'm like, ah, damn it. And I met this other friend of mine who's like, oh yeah, no, I just eat broccoli. You know, and I'm like, what? And I've been eating a lot of vegetables with like almost nothing on them. And sometimes they're delicious and often, not always, but often they've like given me a charge of energy. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know that.
Is your body discovering fiber? Is that what's happening?
My body is discovering fiber. Yeah. Yeah.
I just read something that we should be eating at least like 30 different vegetables a week. That's wild.
Wow. That's mean. Think about the poor vegetable families out there.
No. What are we doing?
30 different?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to count up because I'm like, do I eat 30 different vegetables?
Yeah. Yeah. I could that's why I'm trying to broaden my vegetable consumption.
Me too.
Species wise. Yeah.
Okay. I like that phrasing. I'm broadening my vegetable species.
Yes.
It sounds sinister in some way. Sinister.
I'm determined.
Yeah.
You know, I do put balsamic vinegar and poupon and like Dijon mustard on almost everything. Maybe I should have mentioned that because that's been good.
That's good.
And that's new. And that's brand new.
Oh, yeah. No, balsamic vinaigrette, balsamic glaze. We buy it like that's our hack for everything that like if you want to make it suddenly a little bit better, I'll just drizzle some. My kids do that. Like my 5-year-old would just put, he's like, can I have some balsamic, please? You know, he loves it.
You know, that used to be white sugar. So be happy about that. Used to be white sugar.
Yeah.
So that's good.
All right, Gordon. Something that you love to eat.
I think maybe loving is sort of a unique thing is that I've been doing more identifying all the things that grow naturally in the woods behind me and eating those. Sometimes it's kind of fun because it's like things like, you know, we get tons of, you know, garlic mustard, which is like a plant and it kind of tastes like garlic and mustard. So it's sort of fun just tasting what's just out there in the woods naturally is sort of fun. And yet being very careful about it. So lots of plant identification goes into that. So, yeah.
You don't just like be like, oh, that looks tasty. You like a bite of tree.
No, it's all like identification. It's interesting about nature. It's like there's something that can heal you, kill you, sustain you, give you stomach ache, that can be all growing right next to each other. So yeah, it's which must have been awful for early humans. But
yeah, Michael, since you're new to vegetables, you should know, don't eat every mushroom you see. Okay.
Thank you for that. What are the glowing red ones? No.
No.
All right. Stephanie, what's something that you love to drink?
I love sparkling water. Love it.
Yay.
It's like a fun way to hydrate.
Okay.
My favorite flavor right now is the Waterloo cherry lime. Very good. Or black.
Yeah, I've had those. I like that. All right, Michael.
I'm gonna be so boring and simple. Water. Straight up, unpasteurized, unfiltered, you know, unflavored water without ice or anything. And if it's from like a stream with like rocks in it, I think instead of ice, I'm going to put rocks in my, because I like the taste of rocks. Apparently I'm a nut. I know. I'm a nut.
The answer got so more interesting.
You know, filtered water is okay though. You know, it's not everything needs to be, as it was.
Rocky.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's fine.
E. coli. Yeah.
Don't knock E. coli. I mean, come on. Maybe that's bad. Okay.
All right, Gordon.
Chartreuse. Let's do something interesting. Chartreuse is a floral alcohol that's made by monks in France, and they still guard the recipe. You can get it in most bars, but there's green and yellow chartreuse. It tastes lovely. So that's something. That's my favorite alcohol.
Am I the only one that thought chartreuse was a color?
Yeah,
it is also a color. Yeah, but it's a famous alcohol. You can go get drinks called like, you know, the last word is a chartreuse. It's fun, but I still can't get over, like, I have to come back to Michael's answer because it was like, what do you like? Drink water with rocks in it. Like, so it's so boring. They got so interesting. Like, if this one comes from a stream, I want the different. I want the granite from this stream in my glass.
All right,
wait, Gordon. Chartreuse is a wine. It's a wine.
No, it's like a liquor. Here, I'll do my thing. I'll look it up. It's a liquor. Herbal liquor available in green and yellow, blah, blah, blah. made by monks since 1737.
Wow.
And it's still it's and they're still the ones that make it, and it's a guarded recipe.
When I Google things, it takes me like 5 minutes. He's like 2 seconds.
Well, I got it up because I was looking up the guy you were mentioning earlier, David Graeber. That looks, he looks interesting. But yeah, I'm like, bam, I'm right on it.
Nice.
Wow.
All right. Stephanie, what kind of music do you love?
Do you have to ask? I feel like I've already answered this.
I'm interested in Taylor Swift, but not her, like her life, but I don't care about her music.
I also love, I love Lana Del Rey. I think, Gordon and I connected over our love for Lana. And I also love, like soul music. Love some good soul.
What kind of soul? Mm-hmm. Like I'm really into British soul. I like British soul music a lot.
70s American soul.
70s American soul. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Into that. At the moment, my music taste fluctuates. Okay. But that's all current.
Okay. Michael, what kind of music do you like?
I tend to like stuff where it's got a little like unexpected weirdness to it.
That is not shocking at all. That's not shocking at all.
Yeah, I know that surprised you. to give an example, like some of the jazz musicians that's like a little less concrete. There's this Israeli guy called Avitai Levi, I think, that's been turning me on. But like Tom Waits is somebody who likes to bring some weirdness to it. But on the flip side of that, I like some rocking ass good dance music like James Brown or Prince.
Okay. All right, Gordon?
Sure. I definitely mentioned sort of the general fascination with EDM and its many incarnations, but also, yes, Stephanie mentioned about Lana Del Rey. Lana Del Rey is my favorite singer and singer-songwriter. I am an enormous opera and classical fan, even though the term classical is much too broad. There we go. That was, I said I could be nerdy about that. You know, classical. They call it a classical. Anyway, late romantic music, ballets, you know, Wagner, Tchaikovsky, Beethoven, you know, and because again, it makes sense because like a lot of people that start out loving classical music often end up loving EDM because it's just as, you know, it's all about layers and so on and so forth. So, yeah.
That's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. EDM. I'm Googling that later.
Yeah. Electronic dance music, which again, which is like techno and hard techno, house, deep house, progressive house, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Stephanie, what do you love to create?
Compelling and complex characters.
Okay. I'm going to speed it up. Michael?
Anything. I like to customize things. So like, I don't like how tall my chair is. So I like to build something that makes it shorter or taller or can lean back.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. I like that. Gordon?
Memories. I don't know why you did that.
Beautiful.
You're making one right now, Gordon.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
All right. Number six. What's a game you love to play?
Is that me?
Yeah, Stephanie. What's a game you love to play?
I love the like heads up game that you play on your phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you played that?
Oh yeah.
Or charades. I love a game of charades.
All right, Michael.
Well, I this is not a real answer, but spin the bottles so I get to kiss the girls. But it's not actually a game. You know, I've just been enjoying a simple card game, which is Gin Rummy.
Oh, yeah. That's a fun game. Family friendly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a way to hang out with your friends and stuff like that. Pass the time and we're doing something.
Well, I like that. Gordon?
Right now, there's a video game called Anno 1800 where you build cities from the 1800s and on islands, and you settle new islands, and it's all about trade, economics, and it's people that get really into it are called anoholics. I'm a full-fledged anoholic. At some point, it doesn't just be, I think it's just a hobby at this point, because it's like, there's no victory condition. You're not playing it to like get a score or beat somebody. You're just playing it to keep building more and more beautiful cities.
Wow.
Do you visit other people's islands, or is it just so? Oh.
Yeah. And so, it's a brilliant game.
Like Animal Crossing, except you do things.
Yeah, I've never played Animal Crossing. You can go. I mean, it's a Ubisoft game, so they have like so much of these really high quality assets in their arsenal, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. And an enormous fan of Anno 1800. Okay. And I've been playing. There's Anno series has been going on since I was a kid. You know, like Anno 1504 and et cetera.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I'm going to look that up. It sounds roughly familiar, but I hadn't heard anyone describe it yet. So
people that play City Builders is usually playing like Skylines or things like that. But some people also grew up with like Caesar and Pharaoh building, you know, a Roman city, Egyptian city.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Question 7. Stephanie.
Yes.
In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
My empathy. That's what I think. My empathy.
Do you think that's why you became an actor?
I think it's part of the reason. I think I feel things very deeply, for better or for worse. But I am very, my moon is in Pisces. So I feel things. That actually means that you like take on the feelings of others. Like when someone is feeling anxious, I feel it like with them, or angry, I feel it with them, or sad, I feel it with them. Which is sometimes lovely and sometimes a lot to deal with.
I feel like you're related to my wife, to be honest. Like a lot of your answers are really similar to her answers here. It's funny, like what she's like. That's funny. Michael, in 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
You know, I'm having this annoying response in my head, which is, so the guy David Graeber, Gordon, he's making me think I want them to remember nothing. The great, I'm like, is our society screwed up because of the Romans built the Colosseum that lasted thousands of years? And now we want a whole Colosseum. Everyone wants to be like the Romans. Well, what did they do in there? They killed slaves, would mauled them with animals and stuff. The Iroquois, we didn't have a damn thing that lasted. And these people were the brilliant, the California Indians were freaking, we should be studying them. But they're like, well, that we can't, because they didn't leave anything. Well, maybe that was their genius.
Pressure.
Or my hair. One or the other.
All right, Gordon, from a very windy city right now, hopefully a tornado is not about to take you out from the looks of it. Okay. In 100 years, Gordon, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
A glorious death. Great last words. You know, I feel as though people, I was like, World War III is coming. And I'm just like, I'm ready. I'll be the only cavalry casualty in World War III. I'm just going to get on a horse and sword and be like, let's be done with it.
Charge!
If World War III happens, I'm making it into those textbooks, if the world exists after that, which it probably won't. But if it does,
that's hilarious.
I want there to be like those big history textbooks, this little asterisk down at the bottom of the page. Like, the fun fact, the only cavalry casualty in World War III was this idiot from Pennsylvania. So, you know.
For some reason, you just got onto a horse with a sword and just started charging.
It's like, let's do this. So yeah,
heard of lasers, dude. All right.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get incinerated immediately.
That's hilarious. I love that. Well, hey, thank you all for joining me today, coming on here, answering the 7 questions. Your You know, what's the schedule for you coming out? When does the film drop?
June 11th.
June 11th,
we're on iTunes and Gordon, Amazon, you can find it.
You know, Comcast, DirecTV, anywhere you can rent something, it's going to be there to rent or buy.
And you can
a Wild Eye. Say it again, Stephanie.
You can pre-order it now.
Yes, please do.
Wow.
Yes, indeed.
Wild Eyed and Wicked.
Wicked.
When did the title come to you?
Fun fact, the title came to me when I was really, really young. There was a horse named Wild Eyed and Wicked that was a world championship. It was called Saddlebred.
I'm at $100 on Wild Eyed and Wicked.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not race. They're like show horses.
There's other horses? I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. I think the horse died under, like, I think there was a whole controversy of how the horse died. I never really got more information about that, but
Into the UFO army. Yeah.
Like Randy Quaid in Independence Day, just charging in. Thank you so much for joining me today. And good luck on the film. I think it'll do well. I think you'll scare a lot of people.
Thank you,
Silas. Okay. Thank you. And that's it. That's what we got for this episode. I hope you enjoyed that. I hope that was an entertaining seven questions episode for you. Be sure to tune in. Make sure you've hit the subscribe button so that you can be notified next time an interview drops. Or maybe a movie review or a TV review or a discussion. Who knows? There's so many things that you get from this channel, right? Whichever one you're listening to, whether it's you're watching a movie or Black and a Half. So right now, I just want to thank you for subscribing. Thank you for keeping it real, keeping it Black and a Half. And thank you for watching a movie with Silas Livingstein.
We watch plenty of stuff. Movies, yeah, I've been above. Yeah. Whether big or they small, no, for me, don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas Livingstein in the theaters, you find us. Yeah. So go on and press play and rewind us. This picture is timeless. Love it, like it, or we lose it, can't find it. Yeah. And we ain't keen on being reminded. But the film, if it didn't hit, no, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Yeah. Leave pain behind us. And relax your mind, come watch a movie with Silas. We'll